All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Quadcast. This is your host, Tim.
And I'm Mikey.
And this is Sile. So welcome, welcome, everybody. We have a very exciting episode. I have my friend and maybe colleague joining us today as a special guest speaker. So I'd like to introduce Preston Tassoff, who is a affiliate with NASA, as astrobiology research there. And now he's currently a researcher and was a key player in starting up the microbiome lab at UCSF. So welcome, welcome, Preston.
Thank you, Sahil. It's great to be here.
Great. So yeah, so before we get started, I just want to say a few logistical things and we'll jump into it, that anyone watching this on YouTube, if you have any questions or comments, please do post them in the channel and we'll get to them during this episode. So Preston, let's start off with our listeners. What is microbiome? Like, can you give us a very easy down-to-earth explanation of what it is?
Sure. I'm a microbiologist, and that means I study organisms that you would need a microscope to see. They're much smaller than our own cells. You know, we think about microorganisms as bacteria and also this kingdom that you've never heard of called archaea. And archaea are also single or multi-cell organisms that are microscopic and do the same sort of things as bacteria. So that's microbiology. And the field of microbiome research, I like to equate it to kind of like a tide pool. So I'm from California, and going to the tide pools over at the ocean was one of my favorite things growing up. It's actually, I think, what caused me to be in the field that I'm at now. And when you look in one of those tide pools, it's very small. You see all the hermit crabs and all the anemones and sea stars, and all of those organisms are living in this little micro habitat, and they're all affecting each other because they're in close proximity. So think about this sort of ecology, right, between these animals on just a microscopic scale, and that's microbiome research.
Wow, that's quite the field. I guess, was this always known in the public sphere? Like, what is this suddenly become an up and coming field, or what is, yeah, like, how would you phrase it to people who aren't in the field? Like, is this a big deal, or like, what is this field about?
Wait, can I jump in here? Because maybe like I said, so I'm like a microbiome like fanboy. Like, I maybe like a better than average knowledge. Watch a lot of like Discovery documentaries and just hear like the craziest things all the time about like, okay, so, you know, we think that we're like individuals, right? And we have like complete control over our own destinies, but there are these like millions of little things living inside of us. And they talk to our brain through something called the vagus nerve, and they affect our personality. And it starts to like really blur the lines of like what, where do I stop? And like, you know.
Yeah, I'll unpack some of those ideas that you've heard about this microbiome field. So it's true. Microbes are abundant and everywhere. There are a whooping, one of my favorite numbers. There are 100 trillion microbe cells on your body, in your body. That's 10 times the amount of cells that are microbes than your own cells that are in you. And so what is happening? That's why when there's 10 times as much cells that are you, you know, this is a great question, Michael, like, are they you at that point? So with such a large amount of, you know, of our body being microbes, they're going to affect our health. And we only were able to study them in depth and with the cost effectiveness, given the new technology that's available in sequencing. So there's been sequencing first started in the 80s. And since then, we were only able to sequence like one gene. And then we were able to sequence an entire organisms, all of their genes, called a genome. And now what we're doing in the lab, and what I do in the lab, is I sequence billions of genomes, billions of organisms, and all of their DNA at the same time. And so obviously, you know, that wasn't available in the 80s, and it's only been available since like 2008 was the first sort of studies that came out actually from my alma mater. So it's a very new field. And so that's why we're hearing more about it now. But you can see that since we have so many cells inside of us, and also imagine the environment too. This is not just health related. There's so many organisms, microorganisms, that we have the technology now. So the field is really booming. And what we can do with that field in research, in health research at least, is to start looking at how it affects disease and how it affects our lives and our diets too.
Wait, so is it fair to say that the reason why, you know, recently we're kind of unearthing all these trends about and knowledge about microbiome is just that we didn't know they were there, or did we know that they were there and just couldn't have the means to properly study them?
I think we always knew microbes were around us. Some areas were harder to get to. So like, I don't think it was always known that we had microbes in our gut, but it was always known that, you know, eating soil, you know, your mom didn't let you eat soil because you could catch like a virus or a bacteria. So I think it's always been known, but we just didn't know how much there was and didn't know, you know, how much they actually affect us in our lives and affect the environment and nutrient cycling there too.
So do you specifically study the correlations between like the genetic makeup of your biome and health effects?
Yeah. So here at the Benioff Center for Microbiome Medicine at UCSF, we're a pretty new enterprise, and so we study how microbes in your gut, specifically in your gut, but also we study skin microbiology and microbiology, honestly, your nasal cavity, everything, and how it relates to disease. So my PI, which is pretty much my boss, her name is Dr. Susan Lynch. She's a director of the center, and she studies how your gut microbiome affects your airway microbiome, which affects asthma. So that's one thing that we can correlate, just having the presence of a few different types of bacteria, good ones and bad ones, can affect whether or not you'll get asthma later in life. So this is the potentials of the field. Asthma, I'm studying depression, if there's any links between depression, and we don't know yet, that's why I'm studying it. Depression and, you know, and a big one is irritable bowel syndrome or Crohn's colitis and ulcerative colitis. Those are autoimmune diseases that affect the gut. So that's a big area of research too, that a lot of people suffer from.
Would you say that your gut microbiome is kind of like your second brain or second immune system? Is that a fair
yes.
thing to say?
I would say both. That is actually a really great point, Sahil. So there is this belief, as Michael pointed out when he was, you know, fanboying, that there is this gut-brain axis. What you eat affects what your microbes produce. These are called metabolites. They're proteins and stuff that they produce, but these proteins could bond to receptors and affect how your brain works. So I'm studying if the microbes produce any serotonin, because serotonin is linked to happiness, and happiness could tell us more about like, oh, maybe our microbes are affecting our depression. And so there is this gut-brain axis that that is talked about in the field. And also there's this gut immune system axis where our microbes interact, like pretty much can sometimes influence or take over our immune system. And so the presence of some microbes can, you know, can trigger an autoimmune response, whereas other microbes can really help us, you know, prevent infection. So it's the fact that, you know, it is really highly affecting our own health in our brains and in our immune system.
Oh, Actually, one question I wanted to ask is that I've noticed since I've been changing my eating patterns that the foods I crave have changed. And I'm wondering, like, how much of that is due to my gut microbiome and how much of that is like due to my brain, or like, how are they connected?
Totally. So I'm sure, you know, listeners and you all are interested in, you know, is what I eat affecting, you know, these microbes, which you just told me affect my brain and my immune system? The answer is yes. Yes, it really does matter. There's studies that looked, and I've seen, you know, just like a bunch of scientists got together and they're like, oh, you're a vegetarian? Okay, go on this side. You're a meat eater, go on this side. And they compared their microbiomes, and sure enough, are extreme differences. And more often, there's a lot of inflammation in meat eater sites and a lot less microbial diversity. So diversity is important to keep, you know, just like it is in, you know, in a forest. The more species there are, the kind of more, you know, balanced. And so when you don't have a lot of diversity in your own, you know, forests of your gut, then there's going to be a lot of problems in your immune system, gut-brain axis. And so we want to keep up that diversity. And what type of diets keep up that diversity? But researchers have found Mediterranean diets are some, and more vegetarian plant-based diets, not vegetarian, but plant-based or Mediterranean diets are generally sometimes even prescribed to try and help create more balance to that forest of the microbiome of your gut.
Is there a belief generally that now that certain foods are good for certain people and you know, the same foods that are good for some people might be less healthy for others, and that that's linked to aspects of our microbiome as well?
Right. So the same story, foods, and you can substitute probiotics. So, and I'll also touch base on probiotics after I answer this question. So your microbiome is different than my microbiome. And it's also a product of where we live. We live in an urban environment, people who live in rural environments and people who live more, you know, agricultural or non-Western environments have different microbiomes. So what we eat is, and what we need is going to be different. If we're just talking about nutrition in general, and also if we're talking about our microbiome. And in the case of probiotics, similarly, if there was a true probiotic that worked, it would be catered to the individual. So, you know, the fact that I might need bacteria X, but you need bacteria Y to be healthy. And so a probiotic that's given out on the market that just has bacteria A won't help either of us, or maybe it'll help me and not you. And so most probiotics, I was talking with my my postdoc, who's my supervisor, who's got a PhD. He worked in the probiotics industry, and he said, don't do anything. He was very straightforward about it. Probiotics don't do anything because they're not specific to the individual. Yeah.
I was just wondering, do you have any familiar with Korean, like Eastern, like the Korean version of Eastern medicine?
Yeah. I also do some plant medicine myself.
Uh-huh. Cause like I had the funniest experience when I saw one for the first time. And basically, I guess that's very strong in their medical belief that certain foods are good for certain people, but they could be like, you know, make another person deathly ill. And they feel like they can tell which type you are by feeling your pulse, which I think is silly, but I think it's interesting that like the main indicator of whether or not it's working is how healthy your fecal matter looks.
True.
So are fecal transplants magical? Because I've heard they're magical.
Yeah, honestly, I work with a lot of poop every day. It's definitely the shittiest part of my job, But with that pun aside, it does affect your stool is what we call it. Your poop contains a lot of the microbes that you shed. And so that's actually how we go and see what's in your gut we sequence the DNA in the stool itself, since we're not going to go and take biopsies of your gut. And so I did a study on fecal matter transplants that was published, I believe, 2 years ago. And that study did not show any like success in curing this patient of their recurrent, it was a UTI, urinary tract infection. But for people who are struggling with like a out of whack, you know, a non-diverse microbiome, what it pretty much is, you cleanse your stomach of all of your microbes, and then you ingest a poop pill. And in some cases, it really helps and really works, and it'll cure people of their IBD, irritable bowel syndrome, or their colitis, Crohn's, or any other autoimmune disease, or just something that they might have. Like, what it's used for most is C. difficile, which is a C. diff infection that's the most common cause of diarrhea now. And so that has actually really helped, but in some cases it doesn't. So it's one of those areas of research that we're still figuring out, but it's definitely really cool.
Can I ask you about the craziest thing I ever saw in a documentary, which was yes. The documentary claimed that there was evidence that fecal transplants in mice showed improvements in signs of Parkinson's. And that early signs of Parkinson's can be constipation and other like gut-based syndromes.
Yeah, so that is, the microbiome is linked to a bunch of neurological disorders. Linked though, I wouldn't go ahead and say causes or, but there are correlations. So in science, there's cause and correlation. The two are two big differences. They're misinterpreted in media a lot. And so cause causes something, you know, causes a disease, correlates, which I'm sure you guys are familiar with. But mouse studies too are another thing that mouse studies are great, but of course they're not humans. And so sometimes what we find in mice can or can't be translated to humans. And so, but for the most part, the scientists know what they're doing. And I would say, yeah, there's probably a possibility that it's linked. There's possibilities that autism is linked to the microbiome and other neurological disorders. So, and neurodiverse disorders. So it'll be that's a whole part of the field that is up and coming and definitely something to keep in mind.
How worried should we be about bad science, given like the high impact this has on our health and kind of like the cultural wave and the zeitgeist and things like that?
I didn't hear the first part of your question.
Oh, I was just like, how worried should we be about like junk science and microbiome? Would you say that's like a big issue, like a lot of misinformation, or do you think people are generally doing a really good job staying informed on this?
Did you say strong science or false?
I was just wondering whether or not you thought like people's knowledge of this was generally like good, or if you thought there was like misinformation out there.
Yeah. I think it's both. I think when people think about probiotics and antibiotics, there's a lot of information that's needed. You know, antibiotics can be good and bad. It's always recommended that you finish your course of antibiotics so you don't make any super bugs, as we call them, that are antibiotic resistant. At the same time, antibiotics can kill off a lot of your good bacteria that we talk about that makes your immune system healthy. It can also, as I talked about with the forest metaphor, it can make your forest a lot less diverse and make it only a few, like a lion and a bear in the forest rather than the whole ecosystem. And so you definitely don't want the lion and bear, because they'll just fight and kill off each other and then probably be dead. But there's a little bit of misinformation, but I think since it's a new field, where the scientists that are leading this field are doing their best to address this, because I think we're in an era where misinformation is now kind of a hyper-aware issue, scientists, I don't think were too worried about it before, but there's definitely a lot of the big microbiome scientists, like my professor, are really honing in on trying to cause it. So I'd say most of what you read out there is probably going to be good, but make sure it comes from a good source.
Sounds that way. I was just going to ask you about the antibiotic thing, actually.
Yeah.
So another thought in a different direction, right? So far we've been talking about microbiomes in the human body, but it seems like, is there something special about the human bodies, or are there more general cases where microbiomes are, you know, maybe just on our tables, on our chairs?
Well, it's special because we're humans, right? We're self-centered individuals and self-serving. Let's put all of our government fund dollars into self-serving purposes. No, there's lots of basic science, is what it's called. Basic science and just microbiome research in the environment too. So I'll give you a couple of examples. The first being in organisms outside of ourselves. Let's take the termite, for instance. Termites eat wood, right? Well, that sounds crazy. We can't eat wood. Well, guess what? Termites can't actually eat wood either. They rely on the microorganisms in their guts to help digest the cellulose, digest the fiber. And so that's an example where, you know, microbiomes help in other animals. Ruminants are like cows that chew their cud. They also rely on all the microorganisms similar to the termites in their like six guts that they have, six stomachs. And that helps also digest the grasses and stuff that we can't digest normally. So there's an example of microbiome showing up somewhere else. And you know, honestly, those can be used and employed. We should touch base about, like, you know, the different ways that the microbiome research can be used. But I'll just finish up by saying the other example that I wanted to talk about. So we got the animal model, and we also have microbiomes that exist in lakes. So knowing if you have a lot of a bloom in, say, a bloom is like a, you hear it like an algal bloom, algae like taking over a lake. Well, microbes can do the same thing. Microbes can take over a lake. And then, of course, just like the forest metaphor, if you have one that takes over the lake, then the lake won't be healthy because it's not very diverse. And so that'll affect the plankton that eats the microbes, which will affect the fish that eat the plankton, stuff like that. And so those are some other areas that we do research. And I can talk about, you know, we'll see the direction where it goes, but I can talk about also my research that I did in kind of extremophile environments. And then I can talk about kind of implications of microbiome research when you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, perhaps, perhaps we can try to stay to our question, our title.
Yeah.
Like, how will microbiomes change the world? It seems like microbiomes are everywhere from the description and it affects everything. But it seems like we're just beginning to appreciate kind of the roles that microbiomes play. But do we have more specifics? Like, you know, like what if maybe in the future I can swallow a pill and I can eat like wood or something like that?
I want to eat grass so bad.
Right, straight up. Honestly, so yeah, I sent around to the people on the show, I sent around a infographic that kind of contains these, like, all these different areas where microbiome research can be applied. And I'm going to go through that. You know, I don't think I can share my screen, but I'll go through that circle and kind of show and talk about, like, the implications. So first, of course, you have the human system. So microbiome affects nutrition, and nutrition, what you eat and the diets that you eat will affect your microbiome and your own health, and mental health too. And so that's an area of research that some researchers here do, is kind of how you can have a good healthy diet, not just for your own body's nutrition, but your microbiome's nutrition, so you can be a happier person. Then there's microbiome related to disease. And so, you know, if there's a microbe that can, like I talked about with asthma, so that's how the microbiome can help you prevent you getting asthma early in life, depending on what you're exposed to, like house dust and such. So there's areas we can work to improve the microbiome, to improve or, you know, prevent disease. There's also a lot of medicines that we can get from microbiomes. So there's a few researchers over in San Diego, Paul Jensen and Jack Gilbert, that are mining microbiomes in the ocean, actually, just as for whatever reason, the ocean soil sediments, and they are mining them for potential drugs. They're going through their genes and seeing, is anything here? Can we use it to say, you know, as an antibiotic or something? So that's another area. Then, so that's kind of the human side of things. We switch over to the environment, which is the second point I'll talk about. The environment, we can monitor our water contamination through the microbiome and see if there's, you know, any pathogens in the water. We can monitor the soil health, if there's enough microbes that help interact with the plant roots. And, you know, because we know that plant roots, they house bacteria sometimes inside the roots themselves. So bacteria are really important to plant health. And so, you know, that's another aspect. And also pollution. What microbes are spread across in aerosols that are coming out of maybe factories and such like that? And do they affect us? And the answer is yes. As far as asthma goes, the pollutants are not just, you know, causing, you know, our lungs to get black, but also are affecting our microbiome, which is causing us to become sick. So that's the second environmental implication. And the third, they call it bioremediation. And this is nice. You got it. So bioremediation is, these two forms. So there is, you can use microbes to produce fuel, which is, you know, just hydrocarbons, and use them as kind of like themselves a factory. So you just throw microbes on sugar or whatever, you know, food you have for them. And then if they're the right microbes, they'll produce oil, and then you can use that oil. And there's actually a great spot over in Berkeley called Biofuel Oasis that literally has gas pumps with biodiesel in it. So I don't think that it's going to be a long-term solution, but it's a really cool concept. Lastly, there's some researchers like Dave Valentine over at UC Santa Barbara who are taking microbes and just throwing them on oil spills. And not only do they eat the oil and clean up the oil spills without having to burn them, without having to, you know, put a bunch of pollutants in the water, but they actually have been shown when the oil washes up on the beaches and you put the microbes there, they actually have shown that they turn the oil into other natural products that life can actually use. And so it actually promotes growth and plant growth and fungal growth than just leaving it and having it be a barren desert. So these are kind of the implications of how microbiome research can change the world.
It sounds like maybe you can put some of those microbes on plastic. Maybe, does it work on plastic as well?
Why are microbes so uniquely good at like doing chemical transformations that seem so difficult for humans? I don't know much about chemistry, but
I think they could ask the same thing of you. Why are you so good at being intelligent and having, you know, neural network when they just have like one action potential?
So it's just a numbers game. Like, there's enough organisms, you're gonna find something that processes this into that.
Yeah, just diversity of evolution. Wow. And also, I think the most important thing here is collaboration. It's something that we talk a lot about in the workplace, but and I don't think humans are super good at it, but microbes do it. You know, it's a way of life. You know, the product, one can't live without the other, because the products of one are the food for the other, which then feeds the other. You know, it's a whole system. That's why you can't really take one cell and one bacteria out of the environment and look at it on a petri dish anymore. That age of microbiology is over. You can't look at petri dishes and single organisms. We're looking at all of the organisms in the forest, because they all contribute to the forest.
So bacteria will change the world by teaching us how to share.
There we go. Yes.
Very nice. Yeah.
That's the lessons we can get out of bacteria.
That's my takeaway from this discussion.
That's very beautiful, Mikey. So with that, I think we're at time. And so anything else before we head out, Mikey, Tim, Preston?
No, that'd be good.
Yeah, maybe there. We should be more like microbiomes. I guess on the scale of the earth, we're kind of like microbiomes on earth.
Well, here's the takeaway point. We are just like on a petri dish, just like in a forest, there's limited resources, right? And the earth has limited resources. And if we're going to make it through, we're not going to try and compete against each other. We're going to work with the other microbes. We're going to work with our other humans and share resources, or use the food, use the waste of one thing and turn it into the food of another. And that might help, you know, our own process. But we can take, we can use all of these resources that microbiome research gives us and apply it to, you know, make these changes in the world. And also, you know, maybe the concepts of collaboration too. So it's an awesome field. Definitely don't think too much about what you eat, or else you'll have an unhappy life. But, you know, but yeah, just take it back and make sure you just take advantage of looking at the world through a new lens.
Very nice, very poetic and scientific at the same time, rare combination. So with that, I'd like to thank you so much, Preston, for joining us. And I wanna thank our listeners for also tuning in, and we will see you all next week.
Yeah, see you all next week.